I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is singer, songwriter, and author Josh Ritter. He's out with a new album, Heaven or Someplace as Nice. Peter, we're so looking forward to chatting with Josh today.
Oh, yeah. I've been listening to his album as well, so
yeah,
it's ready to go.
It's
great.
It's wonderful stuff. We've got lots to get to, but first, Peter, I bet you got some nature in the news.
Yeah, Leif. Today we're going to talk about the superb lyrebird, which is a ground-dwelling bird from Australia.
Okay.
And it's known for their ability to mimic sounds, and the male birds have these amazing, beautiful, impressive tail feathers.
Oh, nice.
But we're not going to talk about that. Oh. We're going to talk about what they do to eucalyptus forests.
What do they do to eucalyptus forests?
They're actually amazing because they're a bird that farms.
Go on. What do you mean?
They farm. So they manipulate the forest floors to bring in some of their favorite foods, which are bugs, like centipedes, worms, and spiders. And so they're actually manipulating the ground on the floor. So these invertebrates.
So the bugs come.
And they're actually, it's a better leaf litter, floor, etc. And so these bugs come and they're actually bigger and better and plumpier and juicier and better to
eat.
And they're eating these bugs. Yeah. And so basically what they do is they kind of rake the forest floor.
Okay. And with their beak, I'm assuming, or
with
their feet?
Feet.
Okay.
And
gotcha.
So, and they're kind of turning the leaf litter around and bringing soil up on top.
Okay.
And so they're just making it perfect for these invertebrates.
More pleasant for
Yeah. And it's amazing how much ground they're doing this to, but they also have another benefit.
What's that?
Fire suppression. No, they're finding that they actually have the ability to reduce the amount of forest fires.
Because they're turning over the leaf litter.
Because they're turning over the leaf litter. And you don't have that fire load on top of the forest floors.
Sure.
It's actually under the ground and it's turning into wonderful organic material.
Oh, that's amazing. So they're kind of naturally composting.
Yes.
By overturning the leaf litter on the forest floor.
Right. To raise their bugs.
And they're raising bugs to eat.
Yep.
And meanwhile, they're having the positive, unintended consequences
of
less forest fires. Less hot forest fires.
You know, in the day and age of climate change, forest fires are becoming more and more prevalent. And so these lyrebirds are doing their job.
So I don't know what a lyrebird looks like. You mentioned it has long tail feathers. Is this a big bird, a big animal, or not very big?
You know, off of the pictures that I've seen, I would kind of look at them as pheasant size around there. They might be a little bit smaller.
Okay.
But even the tail feathers are nice and long, like a male pheasant. So.
How fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, the birds are doing a whole bunch. They're doing their part.
They're
getting plumper bugs to eat and preventing fires. Hey,
yeah,
that's pretty good. Well, today we're going to be chatting with Josh Ritter, and our trivia question has to do with a novel that he wrote called The Great Glorious Goddamn of It All. It's a great title. He sets the book in an Idaho town. What's the name of that town? Well, when we come back, we're going to chat with Josh Ritter, and he's going to tell us all about the lifestyle of a working musician as well as his book. So stay tuned. We'll be right on back.
Did you miss the latest edition of The Nature of Idaho or ISU's Research, Innovation, and Creativity Insights? Sometimes it's tough to hear your favorite KISU shows live, but you can listen to them on demand with our free KISU mobile app for your Apple or Android device. Search your app store for KISU to get started.
Hey, welcome back from the break. We're so excited to have singer, songwriter, and author Josh Ritter here. His latest album is called Heaven or Someplace as Nice. First off, hey, welcome to The Nature of Idaho.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me. Well, appreciate it.
It's a delight. You know, we've been doing this. This is our seventh season of the show, and your name was on the list very early on in season one. And so it's been a long time coming. I'm so glad that we're able to connect.
I'm so happy. Thank you.
You're on tour right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm just on a short little tour of about six or seven shows in kind of the upper, in the Northeast corridor. You know, I'm going to finish off in Annapolis tomorrow. And then I'm headed home for a little tiny bit back to Brooklyn, and then I'm going to come out and really be home.
That's wonderful. So yeah, you head out to Treefort out here in Boise, and how's the road treating you? You like being on the road, I imagine.
Absolutely. I do love the life of being on the road. There is something, you know, when you start out, there are all sorts of exciting things about being on the road, and then you go through a period where you're just working really hard and not noticing. And now, like, I'm 48 now, and I've been on the road for about 25 years, you know, and I do feel like the pleasures have refined themselves, you know? There's some things I just can't do anymore, like, that I would love to do, touring is a life that is an ecosystem, you know? And, you know, it's not just your own ecosystem. It's not just your own interior and physical health and well-being. It's as you go through life and you get partners and families and, you know, people who rely on you for all kinds of stuff, it becomes your ecosystem. You begin to have more of an awareness of it and how you can kind of care for it. And one of those things is certainly, you know, not being on the road as much, you know, being home with my family, my young kids, and actually getting to experience real life. Which became such a thing that was, I started to get really jealous of, you know, or like, what am I doing out here? Like, where's my real life? You know, I felt like I'd been living in a very happy, creative, always moving place. And then the time came where I had to put it all into its proper perspective.
And it's great that at this stage of your career, you're able to do this. You're not just starting out where you do have to go across the United States and go over to Europe. You know, I mean, you're making a name, but it's a great way of letting people hear your music. You're at that stage where most people know who you are, and we've heard your music for, like you say, 20 plus years. And you do have that opportunity to really sit down and say, hey, I do get to focus in on my family or other components of your career. And we'll get to that later, especially like with writing your novels and such. So you do have that opportunity, and it's great to see musicians get to this point that you're at in your career.
I feel very lucky. I feel very, very lucky to be able to report back from the edge of wherever I am, and I feel that's what art is about, you know? It's like it's kind of reportage in a way.
So we've got Treefort coming up, which you'll be playing, and there's over 80 Idaho bands playing in Treefort. Can you talk a little bit about what Treefort means to especially these up-and-coming bands or young bands or other musical festivals and the ones that really focus in on our local talent?
I applaud Treefort, and I applaud the growing group of festivals that are interested in showcasing regional and giving people the regional showcase that, like, you know, that is important for their career. And I mean, that's one part of it, is that, like, it is so great, you know, thinking about where Idaho is at right now and new ways to imagine what it means to make a living and what it means to make a life. These are all things that musicians have had to come to terms with in even the most friendly environment to artists. But, like, the idea is that the artists come in, and for whatever reason, they're just a little different than maybe another population. And these two groups of people can meet, and they can share music together. And in that sharing, in that kind of communion, and that kind of breaking of bread of, like, listening to music together and creating music, comes a new way of thinking about life, you know? And a new way of thinking about what your place is. And I just think that is truly the integral point at which, like, everything has to come together, you know? And that is, for me, that life is about getting new ideas and mulling them around. And, you know, it's not always going to come from the media. Sometimes it just comes out of the wind, you know?
So, you know, here we are in Idaho. If you can rewind back to the beginning of your career and when you were just starting out, and you've probably always been a creator at some level your whole life.
Yeah.
What were your early influences and what was it like growing up in Idaho back in the day?
I think maybe slightly my artistic influences, I guess I wouldn't have ever thought about it until much later on, because I think because of where I grew up and being, you know, out kind of on a mountainside, pretty far from even Moscow, there was just a lot of silence and a lot of quiet. And that, along with, I think, my mom and dad were my biggest influences in terms of shaping me into who I was or who I am. And I think Idaho, the landscape, the ability to, like, that I had to, like, kind of walk out the front door, across the gravel road, through the neighbor's little patch of forest, and then feel like I could walk to Canada, you know, and never hit a field, you know. It felt like that to me. It was so exciting, and to grow up, you know, in a place that was so new to my own people, you know, a discovery of of so many things. That was one part of it. Like, it really, really affected me, the landscape and of Idaho and the seasons. My mom and dad, who are both scientists, the neuroscientists, were also, especially I think in different ways, were very much artists in how they conceived of what they were doing. You know, there's an envisioning and a requirement, I think, in scientists that they, like, you look at something that has been looked at before and you try and describe it again. You know, you describe it in new ways, because our language and the way we describe things is the only way we can really share that stuff, you know? And I think it's really important. So I was always really drawn to the idea of descriptive writing, because the right word can do everything. And then when you add to music, suddenly there's like there's a catalytic conversion of something, a reaction. And what is written down suddenly enters into a new dimension, you know, where it's not written down and it's going from head to head. You know, it travels in the air and it just goes out, like, just, it goes everywhere. And it's so beautiful. And I still don't know what else could do that. The wind, you know, what else can give us that, you know? And so I was fascinated with that. But it all came from, I guess, trying to really start to understand the magic and the beauty of where I was from and the mystery of the places that I would, like, hike off to in the middle of the day on some weekend, or, you know, delivering papers for the Moscow Woman Daily News at, like, on Friday nights, you know. You know, that was like for the Saturday edition in the morning. They were such profound experiences. And I think the only way for me to, like, share those has been kind of by trying to open up the world of those places as wide as I can. So they just kind of will influence my music and ground my music, even personally, I think. Sorry, that might be a little rambly, but
that's okay. So
I think that's, like, I really do believe that the confluence of those influences is really what made me into a writer.
So did you grow up with a lot of music in the background as well? You know, I sit back and I think about my childhood, and I'm slightly older than you, when my mom brought home, it was like in 74, 75, it was a Pioneer stereo system. You know, turntable, yeah. And it didn't have the 8-track.
The one, yeah.
It had a cassette player in there, and it got to the point where most nights we didn't even turn on the TV. We were just playing records.
Just music.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That was, another function of growing up in Idaho was that when I was growing up, we had two TV stations, you know? We had KLEW and we had KUID. And everything else was static coming in from Spokane or somewhere else, you know? And that was profoundly important, you know? To, like, in both the fact that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't pulled into that. And also for that reason, a lot of the discoveries about, like, popular culture came along so much later in my life, you know? And I think that that's good for me, because I typically tend to learn things that everybody knows by discovering them myself and just being so wowed, you know? And music was not a big part of our growing up, my brother and I. I played the violin for about 13 years, but it was not something that I considered to be music. I considered it to be, like, something else. It wasn't it, and the music that I did hear, you know, was like some AM stuff and like a folk show, you know, on the radio. And I think that that was really important. You know, it was really important that those things came along later on. And my scope wasn't too wide. I had to make a lot of imagination out of the things that were going in.
I think, like you said, the key point is you didn't fall into, well, this is how you're supposed to write a song. You're supposed to do lyrics like this. You're supposed to do the music like this. You had an open door, yeah, in a sense, that you can come in and write the lyrics and the songs the way you wanted to write them and not necessarily what the standard of the day is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had been fascinated with music and songs for, I'm really thinking back. Like, I remember my dad getting Sgt. Pepper's for my mom on their 20th wedding anniversary, you know?
That's a good gift.
The first, yeah, it starts with, it was 20 years ago today, you know, and like, and it was a CD, you know, and we had a CD player, you know, which looked like a, you know, the back of a jet practically. And, you know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, hearing that in fourth grade, you know, that was a mystical experience. I never knew music like that existed. But then, you know, you go through life and you're in high school and there's a lot of stuff that's very, you know, burnished and polished up and made to like signify place within a group or signify like a team mentality or these. Yeah. And Idaho, Moscow didn't have a lot of that. There wasn't like, to the extent that music existed, there was very little judgment about what it was. And that was really cool, you know, because when I started writing stuff that felt like it was truly like right, but also not correct, like there was no one to tell me that, you know? So I just assumed it was correct. And then I kept on doing it that way. And that's how that turned out, you know? But I think that was like really cool. And I really think that that's a great thing that we do have in Idaho is the ability to like, you know, there is a, at least when I was growing up, there was a feeling that there was certain things just didn't make it. Certain ideas. I remember driving around with my friend one night and realizing that at the University 4, there was a Cineplex. There was like three Tom Cruise movies going on at the same time. So we called it the Tom Cruise filter. Like, we're waiting to get the non-Tom Cruise movies. But like, that also plays such an important part, is like, not everything that's shiny will last. And sometimes you write from the heart, and those things which are rugged and don't quite work end up being more useful. People.
I'm really interested in the idea of growing up and being rooted in a place like Idaho, and then spending a big part of your adult life traveling away from Idaho, and how those new experiences can lead to new creative ideas and so forth, but still having this foundation of the past rooted in Idaho. How do those two kind of work off of each other, one creating new ideas and one being a foundation?
Oh, well, yeah. Like, frankly, it's, I think a lot of times, like how, not that I thought it specifically, but when I've been asked to talk about like, and describe what writing is, especially like making an album, right, I feel that the way I can best understand it is that I am, you know, at the beginning, I'm just out there on the ocean in a boat. And, you know, and then you see the bird and you know that maybe land is coming, you know, maybe just a couplet or a, you know, or a phrase that you wake up with, or an obsession with a song that you used to listen to when you were four or something like that. You know, one of those things, a little sign that something is happening. And then from that moment, moving forward, drifting into view of a new continent, you know, or a new planet. And the only stuff that is there is your songs that you're going to discover. You know, you're not going to write them. You're going to find them, you know? You're going to find them. And that's, it helps me because, you know, writing has never been for me about sitting down at a desk at home. And in writing, I feel that, you know, I have too much to do and I've got people to take care of. And I just don't, that's not the way I work. And so for me, it's much better to think about writing in art as exploration followed by letters home, you know? Sometimes experiences that we have are so personal, you know, that sometimes it's hard to even begin to think about how to share the feelings that were elicited by an experience that you didn't understand or that you were so happy about or you're devastated by. Words don't exist for that. So sometimes I can create something that is, I feel good about, because I know that it can go out and hopefully describe someone else's experience in some way that nothing else can. And that's important to me because, you know, life is confusing and strange, and there's a lot to be nervous about and a lot to be excited about. And when you're writing, you are sending out a message that other people are out there, you know?
I love it where there's the cliche, oh, you got this inspiration, and yours was, the song is waiting for me to discover. And I kind of like that approach so much better. So speaking of your songs, you worked with the Boston Symphony.
Yeah.
So you've got this massive orchestra, and you're moving your songs into an orchestra. What is that process like?
Oh, man, the end result was like standing in the middle of an enormous piano, you know, and the strings and everything ringing around. It's a very beautiful experience because I'd seen people that had done that before, and I thought, that looks fun, you know? I like the idea of, I mean, what an ego trip, you know? So amazing. So let's try that. But at the same time, you work with somebody who helps you do the arrangements, and then you get there and people just are playing your music. And if you start to like actually listen, you're like, this is so incredible. And then you forget the words, you know? Like, so once you're out there and there's a whole bunch of people who are like not your band who can cover up your mistakes because they know you and they know you always mess this one part up or whatever. There's like 80 people there and they, you know, and they're real musicians, you know, actual musicians. And so when you get off stage, it is just it's both a relief, but also it's like getting to go up in one of those, like, you know, rockets and look down at the earth for a few minutes, you know? It's an amazing experience. And honestly, I don't think it's any different for me to think about playing with an orchestra than it would be for anyone else on earth to think about it. It's except for, you know, it's crazy. Yeah. But fun. You know?
But fun. Yeah, the sound must be intense.
Yeah, it is. It is intense. But, like, that's another thing. It's like, you know, the places that they do this stuff where they have the Boston Symphony or they're made for these acoustic situations and you know, they're not used to having a drum set there or like or an electric guitar. And so the music ends up being incredibly rich sonically, but also very light. And like dispersal happens that you almost feel like it's quiet on stage. But, you know, the music isn't hitting you at an amplified level. It's coming to you not being pushed by anything, which is different than a rock show where you plug in and you expect to be battered, you know, by the sound coming back just so you can hear yourself, you know? I love it.
That sounds fun. So could you tell us about this novel that you wrote? And at the same time, you can also maybe do double duty by answering a trivia question. It's set in an Idaho town. You can tell us about. The book is called The Great Glorious Goddamn of It All. I love the title. Tell us a little bit about it.
I've written a bunch of novels, only two that I've like published, but like, you know, a lot of them are pretty bad, so I'll leave them until I can convince myself they're better. But I was nervous the first time to write a book about Idaho, set in Idaho, because I honestly didn't feel like I was a good enough writer yet. I wanted to, but I remember one day I was in Troy, Idaho, right, pretty close to Moscow, but you know, heading towards St. Joe, and I met an old lady there who was sitting, looked like the bar had just grown around her, you know, and I felt a little also like I had come up and she was already talking to me before I even got there, you know, and I was ordering and she started telling me a story that I don't really remember now, except I remembered the creativity that she used her swearing. It was beautiful. Like, she obviously had such a feel for language that she knew how to slip things in and say what she wanted and what she was thinking in a way I hadn't heard anybody do before. And I was like, man, she's been here in Troy this whole time. Over time, my mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and I was spending quite a bit more time back there and at an age when I felt like I could see Idaho in a different way. And I just wanted to start writing about these, like, about this area, you know, about the Palouse and about the St. Joe, because to me it was like being thrown into a world of folklore that was so, it had just been right next to me the whole time, you know? I've been going the Wobblies, you know, Joe Hill, you know, Hey Why I'm at Quinta, you know, like, you know, Spokane, and the seasonal work and that happened during the 20s and 30s. And it was just such a, and also it was there so close that you could go down to the antique store and find things from that time that were just sitting there, you know, that to me felt like they had belonged to giants, you know, and, you know, they just seemed so impossibly larger than life, a real tall tale, these stories. You know, for instance, there was a paddle boat on the, going between Coeur d'Alene and St. Mary's called the, I think it was the Miss Giggles. And it was, you could do anything on that paddle boat as long as they didn't touch shore. But Miss Giggles goes up and down this, and like, imagine the story. You can just reach anywhere and grab a story. And also, I like, for writing about Idaho, and writing about Idaho at that period of time, 1920s, it feels like you're just rubbing up against the friction of fantasy, you know? No one's going to be looking back at the whoppers that I put in there, you know? And it's all for fun. It's all for, you know, joy and happiness and writing a story. And I just had a great time. And Idaho was the place, yeah.
What was
Cordelia,
the
Idaho, yeah.
Cordelia, yeah.
Yeah, Cordelia, yeah.
That's awesome.
I like the idea of naming it. The Great Glorious Goddamn of it all is about a 99-year-old man who's looking. He's been shot several times in his trailer out of St. Joe by his second mortal enemy in life. And, you know, he gets the feeling that he might be passing on to the next scene. So he's telling the story to someone. And it's about how he saved his claim on a piece of land from a kind of a woods beast, you know? And I thought that a claim on a piece of land needed a King Lear reference. So I made a Cordelia.
That's awesome. And Josh, we really want to thank you for joining us today. And for all the folks listening, just go to joshritter.com. You can look at all his albums. You can look at the books and go out and purchase the album, whether it's CD or vinyl. Grab his books as well. They're fantastic. So again, thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you. And thank you for like giving me the opportunity to talk. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate folks listening. I'm way past like wanting to like feel like I'm making a name. I just want to make people happy. You know? I really really do. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk to this.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Shelby McGovern and Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org, from Spotify or other select podcast services, or from KISU's mobile app. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.